All right, I wanted to start another series, but there's been so much happening here the last few weeks that we hadn't talked about, so I just want to take it one lesson. I don't know if we'll get through all of it today, but at least one lesson just to talk about a couple of things that are going on. And, of course, one of the more intriguing things that's been happening is that in Israel, since last summer is when John Kerry, Secretary of State, began to work on getting the Israelis and the Palestinians back into the peace talks. We just had a couple of the Phyllis and Randy Meredith just got back from Israel, and they're ready to go again, and I want to go with them. So, and then Bobby and, no, Connie Garrett gets to go here in 2 weeks, so I'm just jealous. Anyway, so from about July of last year, they've been trying to get the peace talks restarted again, and the same issues keep coming up over and over with everything, the usual problems, the usual accusations, but Kerry's trying to get them to the table. Well, then last week, kind of out of nowhere, blindsided everybody, the PLO president, the Palestinian Liberation Organization president, Mahmoud Abbas, he tells the press that he is getting into talks with Hamas to reconcile and to form a unity government. Well, that blows everything out of the water, because Hamas is a terrorist organization labeled by the United States and most of the rest of the civil world. They're a terrorist organization. And so what is happening, Abbas is with the a group called Fatah, sort of like a political party. What you have is the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which is the overall government. Then you have these individual parties, Hamas and Fatah, that are the elected officials. And so what Fatah is doing through Abbas is saying, hey, we want to get back together with Hamas and form a unity government. Well, so that kind of blows the talks out of the water. They were supposed to have an April 29th deadline to do something to continue the talks, but I'm afraid that's off. So what has happened, the history of it is that in February 2006, the Palestinians had elections. And to everybody's surprise, Hamas was elected in the PLO to run the government. And of course, you know, that blindsided us, just like the Muslim Brotherhood blindsided us in Egypt, just like, you know, all of these groups, you know, we just think, don't all these people want to be democratic and happy? No, probably not. And so they elected Hamas. Well, Hamas and Fatah began fighting. This was in February 2006. And they had some really knockdown, drag-out battles about who was really going to control the PLO. This went on almost a year, and finally in July of 2007, they had some real violence, a lot of deaths between the Fatah group and the Hamas group. And so what happened was that Hamas wound up taking control of the Gaza Strip. Fatah controlled the West Bank. So now you have two Palestinian states, basically. And Israel recognizes that. They say, you know, we cannot negotiate with Hamas. Hamas is dedicated to the destruction of the Israeli state. Well, so is the whole PLO. I'll show you in just a second. But Hamas is a terrorist organization. We can't negotiate with them. So we will negotiate with Fatah and the West Bank and do the best we can, but we're going to ignore Hamas. Well, immediately Hamas started launching rockets into Israel, and they've been launching rockets ever since into Israel. And Israel goes in and bombs these sites. And then December 2012, over 1,000 rockets were launched out of the Gaza Strip and into southern Israel. And Israel retaliated and tried to bomb these rocket launchers and everything, several of them since then. Well, then Monday of last week, there were 7 rockets launched out of the Gaza Strip and into Israeli territory. Then on Wednesday, the 23rd, is when Abbas announces this unity government, this reconciliation, and it was the same day that the Israeli Air Force hit airstrikes in the Gaza Strip to knock out some of these rocket launchers. And so, of course, Hamas turns right around and goes, see what we're putting up with? Israel, the big bully, is trying to kill us all and all of this. And so we need to form a new government. Abbas is saying, yes, we need to come together and form a new government and run all of this and negotiate as a single entity. And if anybody buys that, I just want to show you a few things, remind you of, and I've shown some of this before. The PLO charter that was done in 1968 that has not been redone, which I just can't understand why our Secretary of State or whoever in our government doesn't say, look, we're not going to any negotiation table until you redo your charter. That's the first thing that needs to happen whenever you have this in your charter, that the partition of Palestine in 1947, the establishment of the State of Israel, are entirely illegal regardless of the passage of time. Whenever you have that, and even worse, in your charter against Israel, why do you want to negotiate with these people? How do you think that you can negotiate with these folks? That just amazes me that they let that continue. Some of the rest of it. Claims of historical or religious ties of Jews with Palestine are incompatible with the facts of history and the true conception of what constitutes statehood. Judaism, being a religion, is not an independent nationality, nor do Jews constitute a single nation with an identity of its own. They are citizens of the states to which they belong. They need to talk to God. They're wrong. Okay? This is in their charter, so they are not. One of the conditions that Kerry wants is the recognition of Israel as a Jewish state. That's what the Jews want. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu is asking for. Well, their charter says they can't do that. Okay? You got a problem there. If you're trying to form two nations, the Palestinian nation and the nation of Israel, and they don't even recognize each other to begin with, you got a problem going into negotiations. Okay? Another article, the Arab Palestinian people expressing themselves by the armed Palestinian revolution reject all solutions which are substitutes for the total liberation of Palestine and reject all proposals aiming at the liquidation of the Palestinian problem or its internationalization. So exactly how do you go about doing peace talks with somebody who rejects up front any solution except armed revolution? Okay? So, these are things that people just don't understand. Why can't these people get along? And I'm saying there's a fundamental problem, not only with biblical proportions that we've talked about before, but whenever their own constitutions are set up with verbiage like this, exactly how do you negotiate to begin with these folks? All right, so now then, let's go into the individual parties. All right? So the Hamas party, of course, that runs the Gaza Strip right now, their constitution says, the Islamic Resistance Movement believes that the land of Palestine, the entire land of Palestine, is an Islamic waqf, which is an Islamic spiritual authority. The land of Palestine is an Islamic spiritual authority, consecrated for future Muslim generations until Judgment Day. It or any part of it should not be squandered. It or any part of it should not be given up. Okay, now then, how do you propose a two-state solution with this? How do you go about doing that? There is no solution for the Palestinian question except through jihad. Negotiations are kind of off the table. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are all a waste of time and vain endeavors. Now then, you want to form a unity government with Fatah and then go to the peace talks with this? No, afraid not. Then the Fatah movement, are they any better? Well, their goals state that they are establishing an independent democratic state. Well, that sounds good. With complete sovereignty over all Palestinian lands. And Jerusalem as its capital city. Oops. And protecting the citizens' legal and equal rights without any racial or religious discrimination. Now then you got the question, okay, here is a party within the PLO. And this party says, there's no religious discrimination. But yet the PLO Constitution says Judaism shouldn't be allowed. Wait a minute. Hang on just a second. All right, so see, you got some basic issues there. And then how do you go about this method of achieving your goals? Well, armed public revolution is the inevitable method to liberating Palestine. There you go. How do you make this work? Well, you got to kill all the Jews. That's what you have to do. Opposing any political solution offered as an alternative to demolishing the Zionist occupation in Palestine. All right, so again, do we negotiate this? No, you oppose any political solution because the only solution is to demolish the Zionist occupation, as well as any project intended to liquidate the Palestinian case or impose any international mandate on its people. And Article 25, convincing concerned countries in the world to prevent Jewish immigration to Palestine is a method of solving the problem. Guess what? We want all the territory and we don't want any Jews here. That's all there is to it. And that's exactly what comes through time and time again whenever you read the newspapers and interviews with any of the factions out of the PLO or any of the Arab nations around there. This is what comes out. So in November of 2012, and how this ties in with what's happened just this last week is, November 2012, the United Nations voted to recognize Palestine as a non-member observer state, which is about on the level of the United Nations as the Vatican. All right, so here you have a group of people who do not have a country. Palestine is not a country. There are no set borders for Palestine. There is not a constitution for the nation of Palestine. There is not a currency. There is nothing about Palestine that makes it an official country. Palestine does not exist as an official country. But yet, the United Nations recognizes them as a non-member observer state. So what happened, and this quote I had, this is from last year, about the time the peace talks started, Mahmoud Abbas laid out his vision on Monday for the final status of Israeli-Palestinian relations. And he said, in a final resolution, we would not see the presence of a single Israeli, civilian or soldier, on our lands. Now then, Israel has always welcomed any Arab that wanted to become an Israeli citizen ever since the day that they were born. But the reciprocation from the other side is not going to happen. So do you again negotiate to form a new country that up front says, yeah, but there's some people we don't want in here. And what they're coming down to is, we really don't want the Jews in our country. And so again, do you negotiate with this? How do you handle this? So what happened was, last week, again, to enforce this status in the United Nations, is that Mahmoud Abbas signed 15 different international conventions. One of them was the Geneva Convention. That he is saying that, yes, we sign on to these international conventions. Now wait a minute. Again, Palestine is not even a nation, and he is signing on to these conventions that everybody else signs on to as an official country. So what he's trying to do is to make his country look official in the world's eyes, without it being a real country. And he's saying, and my country includes Jerusalem as its capital. So they're kind of working in through the back door and trying to make things look official in order to make it work rather than negotiate. And so that's been some of the problems. Netanyahu said several times, we cannot negotiate a two-state solution until the borders of these states are defined. And so that's some of the issues that have just gone on just here in the last couple of weeks. So this was just blowing me out of the water as you start to look at these things and going, oh my goodness. Okay, then you, any questions on that? Any questions on that part of it?
Well, I know we're not supposed to use the word jihad.
Well, yes, that's a politically incorrect term. And then in their constitutions, they state that the only way to achieve this is through jihad. Now if they can say it, why can't we? Anything else on this part of it? Okay, then a couple of other interesting things. Syria, of course, there's over 200,000 people dead now in Syria. 2.5 million refugees. It's just insane. Out of control. And not much is being done about it. Of course, Iran continues to support Bashar al-Assad because they are Shia people, even though some people don't recognize the Alawite sect that Assad is a member of as real Shia Islam, but you know they'll at least fight along those same lines because they're fighting against the Sunnis, which is kind of a common deal. So Al-Qaeda is supporting the opposition in Syria because they are Sunni. So once again, like I've said so many times, when you start looking at what is at the root of all of these issues, it's normally the Sunni versus Shia Muslim infighting that's been going on for 1,400 years. So the same issue. Same thing in Baghdad. Day before yesterday, over 30 people were killed by a suicide bomber. It was a Shiite movement meeting or event, and some suicide bombers, Sunnis, came in and have killed over 30 people. The death toll was probably going to rise again. So once again, all these places that we've been trying to help in, it is still the same foundational problem with the Sunnis versus the Shiites in all these different areas. The fighting has just continued to go on. And then all of the things that you've been reading about and hearing about, you know, what in the world is Vladimir Putin doing in Russia, running roughshod, taking Crimea, threatening Ukraine, the troop buildups and incursions that are going on there, that it's just the tension is building, going crazy. And of course, everybody remembers, okay, well now, wait a minute, and the biblical prophecy is Ezekiel 38 and 39, and God says when Gog and Magog, when Gog attacks the land of Israel, my hot anger will be aroused, declares the Sovereign Lord. So we know that at some time it's prophesied that there's going to be an invasion into Israel. Gog and Magog, most people believe, is a coalition of governments of probably Russia, Iran, and Turkey. And how in the world do these groups get together and invade Israel, and why would they do it? But yet the Gog and Magog prophecy is there. And you see Russia doing what they're doing. You see how easily these things could fall into place. I'm not pinpointing anything. I'm not saying there's prophecy being fulfilled in front of us. What I am saying is I see all these events and go, you know what? This could fall into place just like that. And it's so fascinating to watch from that direction. The one thing that I keep going back to that is amazing to me is Russia, and I've got a slide here. This is the natural gas pipeline distribution that goes from Russia through Ukraine and into Europe. And if you remember, back in 2009, there was a dispute, and Russia cut off gas through the Ukraine, and Poland and all the Eastern Europeans almost froze to death because it was like in February. Well, you see the impact of what happens if Russia takes Ukraine. They can manipulate Europe any way that they want to. And so that's part of the problem. Now then, what's just fascinating to me is, along that same time, Israel has discovered some of the largest natural gas deposits in the world off the coast of Israel in the Mediterranean. They should be an energy exporting nation in 2015. So now then, if they're energy exporting and Russia shuts off gas and Israel steps in and says, we'll take care of Poland, do you think Russia's going to sit there and let that happen? Also, if OPEC thinks that the Jews are taking any of their energy market away, it's one of those things. Do you think the OPEC is going to sit around and let Israel do this? So that's just right on the edge. Israel is developing these gas fields. They're starting to look at liquefied natural gas distribution to Europe and other ports like that, plus build pipeline distribution systems. But they think that they will be going online in 2015. So, you think, well, is that one of the possibilities? How does that all fit together? Don't know, but there's just one more little piece of the puzzle. Okay? And any other questions about any of these world events? Yes? Or, yep.
There's a couple of things. In Ukraine, they're making the Jews sign a national registry and have a list of all the Jews that are in Ukraine.
Oh, I didn't know that. He says that in Ukraine they are asking the Jews to form sign to a national registry so they can locate all the Jews in Ukraine, which there's quite a few.
And the second thing is, in Israel today is the day they set aside to remember the Holocaust.
Yes, Holocaust Remembrance Day today in Israel. There's just a lot of odd things. I hadn't heard about the Ukrainian Jews having to register. That sounds all too familiar. Yes?
Back, I can't remember how far back it was, but I remember when I was working at the prison that at one point the OPEC nations started bombing their own sites so that they wouldn't have to worry about invasion and somebody coming in and taking their oil and all that.
Yeah.
I can see that happening again.
Sure. Yeah, and that happened in the first Gulf War, where Hussein was wiping out all of the oil rigs on his way out, things like that. So it's like, well, if we can't have it, neither can they, type deal. And what lengths would they go to keep Israel from becoming an energy exporter? That's an easy. They'd do it. So, anything else? Yeah.
We might be of some help about that group.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, we could kind of chip in with that, I guess. So talking about the Keystone, yes?
One of my favorite news items this week was about the scary tweet that someone in our government sent to Vladimir Putin to tell him to straighten up.
No, I didn't.
They just sent him a full tweet, hashtag, however it all works. Instead of, really doing something, they...
Tweet. I hadn't heard that. Diplomacy by tweeting. That just doesn't...
Yeah,
oh my goodness, I got tweeted. How low can we go? Oh, man. Anything else? And I don't want to get into the next part because we got to talk about blood moons, okay? Since it's all been kind of like going crazy. Just want to talk about that, but I don't want to get into it yet because it's been too much. Anything else before we go? Yes, sir? I'm sorry?
Are any of them pipelines in the Ukraine owned by American companies?
The pipelines? I don't know. Are any of the pipelines in the Ukraine owned by American companies? I don't know. I assume they were all Russian before it all fell apart.
Yeah, it's Russians' interest because, they've had that land for 200
yeah.
plus.
So,
and I think that is all their pipeline.
They just want it all back. So he's thinking that it's all Russian. It was built by the Russians, and basically they want it back. So, anything else? Again, and it goes back to also... blood moons and everything. I don't present this stuff to get everybody on the edge or anything like that. Again, there is so much going on that I believe that we're to stay watchful. Measure everything against God's word. Be stable, steady about it, and watch what's going on. Be smart about it. Yes, ma'am? What?
Remember who
did. Yeah, we know that God's in control totally. We know the outcome. We know all of this thing, so it's not worth getting crazy about it. And so that's why I wanted to talk about blood moons also. So we'll do that next week. Let's have a prayer. Almighty God, we know that you can do all things. We know that you're in total control because you are God sovereign. You are sovereign over every single person, every single nation, every single leader in the entire world. And we thank you that you are the one that is managing it because you are good. God, you are doing all things together toward the good, and we know that you are accomplishing these things. Help us to know what our purpose is, our position is, and that is to spread the gospel, to teach others of your glory. Any moment that we have that opportunity, let us stand brave and strong for you. We thank you that you give us these opportunities every day. We are sorry when we don't recognize them or if we pass them up. We thank you for your Son Jesus. In his name, amen. Thank you for being here.